Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'll be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Saturday, January 7th, 2023. Officials glad EPA postpones designation decision, by Mella McEwen. Area officials expressed relief at the news the Environmental Protection Agency is not pursuing plans to redesignate the Permian Basin as being in non-attainment of national ambient air quality standards for ozone. "We are pleased by the EPA's decision to not pursue this action," James Bocamp, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, told the Reporter Telegram by email. "Based on the data MOTRAN collected and submitted, we did not find any basis for the action. In fact, quite to the contrary. We appreciate the strong stance taken on the issue by Representatives Landgraf and Craddock, State Senator-elect Kevin Sparks, Congressman Pfluger, and Governor Abbott, as well as the strong efforts by PBPA. Ben Shepard, the president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, was also pleased with the decision. "This issue has been one of the highest priority issues of our association," Shepard told the Reporter Telegram by email. "We've been working on this issue for the last year or so and are convinced that the data does not support a non-attainment finding. The industry continues to reduce emissions year over year, and our commitment to do so is strong." Shepard went on to add, "We also recognize that the EPA has agreed not to make the decision this year. We hope that as better data continues to be gathered, the decision will become permanent. An area is considered to be a non-attainment when it exceeds standards, in this case 70 parts per billion under current regulations, over a certain time period." Local elected officials, MOTRAN and the PBPA, were joined in their opposition to the redesignation by other state oil and gas associations, which reported their pleasure with the decision's postponement. "The decision by the EPA to not pursue designation of the Permian Basin as a non-attainment area for the ozone standard is the correct one. The wide open spaces of West Texas and eastern New Mexico are home to the oil and natural gas that fuel our economy and enhance modern life," Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Staples noted that carbon dioxide, methane, and other related emissions have been declining substantially over the last few years, and operators are focused on continued good environmental stewardship. In fact, he wrote, "The Permian Basin is among the cleanest in the world, according to its lower carbon intensity. Excessive government regulation is unnecessary and stifles affordable and reliable energy supplies. The oil and natural gas industry remains committed to making smart choices to improve air quality in this region and deliver the resources that are indispensable to our state, nation, and the world." Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, TPRO, told the Reporter Telegram by email, "We are relieved to learn that the EPA at this time has decided not to pursue policy changes that would designate portions of the Permian Basin as being in non-attainment of federal air standards, something our association has fiercely advocated against." Like Shepard and Staples, Longenecker noted that the industry has made monumental steps in reducing pollutants, and the state's oil and gas producers continue taking the steps needed to improve air quality. "If the administration and EPA want to craft successful policy moving forward, they should be partnering with private industry in a collaborative manner to help advance emissions reduction efforts, not forcing them through unneeded and onerous regulatory mandates," Longenecker wrote. Petition launched after teen's death at intersection, by Ben Schaefer. An online petition has been started to add a traffic light and crosswalk at the Northeast Midland intersection where a teenage girl riding an electric skateboard was involved in a collision with a vehicle. The Change.org petition calls for changes at Magellan Street and Mockingbird Lane following the death of Sia Ashlyn Kearns. The 14-year-old succumbed to her injuries earlier this week after the collision on January 1st. Stonebridge Drive, Magellan Street, has become a through street, resulting in an immense amount of traffic at all hours, but specifically during bus stop hours. Pavilion Park signed up for the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program to no avail, the petition states. 2 days ago, the petition's organizer shared an update that claimed Gabe McClelland from the City of Midland started a new study on January 5th. This process includes installing counters to figure out the extent of traffic at the area. The Fairgrounds Road Project, north of Loop 250, will start this spring or summer, which will reduce traffic down Stonebridge, according to McClelland. Until then, Encore will add additional streetlights at the intersection, and they will be installing radar feedback signs, the post reads. Once the city finishes the study, it will determine the best modification to the intersection. As of Friday afternoon, there were 922 signatures on the petition.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with two other front page stories from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, January 7th, 2023. City expects boil water notice to be rescinded. TCEQ could make call as early as Saturday morning, by Stuart Doreen. City of Midland Utilities Director Carl Crago expects the boil water notice in place in the City of Midland to be rescinded Saturday morning. Crago said during a Friday morning press conference that there is fresh water going through the water treatment plant that meets standards provided by the state of Texas. He said requirements still include a 24-hour test before the notice can be rescinded. Those tests have been taken and sent to the Texas Commission of Environmental Quality. He expects to hear from the TCEQ early Saturday. Crago said the water main that was damaged by a contractor working on a D.R. Horton development next to State Highway 158, west of Grassland, is welded up and mainly fixed. He said the process included disinfecting water and flushing around 500,000 gallons during two separate flushes Friday afternoon. "We feel a lot better than we did last night about water quality and where we are headed," said Morris Williams, the deputy city manager of the City of Midland. Crago reminded Midlanders that it is important to clean reverse osmosis RO filters after the boil water notice ends. That can be done, he said, by turning on the water in the RO systems for 15 minutes. Crago also thanked utilities department employees for their work with Red Deer Construction, Benmark Supply Company, and Ferguson Supply for their efforts, including keeping the doors open Thursday night, Friday morning. Water distribution takes place. The City of Midland worked with the West Texas Food Bank to make sure those who needed bottled water had it on Friday. Five sites were set up as water distribution areas. They were Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center, Chapp Center at Midland College, Stonegate Fellowship, First Baptist Church, and the Southeast Midland Senior Center. Businesses that helped with resources, according to officials, included HEB, United Supermarkets, and Sam's Club. Why Midland ISD did not have classes. Midland ISD decided to close school out of a desire to provide the safest possible environment for students. The district did not have access to sufficient quantities of bottled water to safely prepare meals for our nearly 28,000 students, MISD offered in a statement. Due to the logistics of breakfast and lunch schedules for this many students, boiling water in sufficient quantities was also not a feasible option. Midland College and Midland Christian also did not have class Friday. Food offered for students. West Texas Food Bank Executive Director Libby Campbell said resources were available for those students who typically receive a sack or are enrolled in the Food Cafe program at Boys and Girls Club. City of Midland officials also provided students looking for meals on Friday the opportunity to eat at the MLK Community Center or the Southeast Senior Center. Midland Eateries Persist in Water Boil Notice by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Walking into Pachuco's during the noon lunch rush almost made me forget about the water boil notice. With every seat taken and a line against the wall, owner Ruben Carrasco Jr. stood behind the glass barrier, chopping brisket and sausage just like any other day. "How's it going?" I asked him. "Ask me again in a few hours," he joked. Styrofoam cups, lids, baskets, and plates line the assembly station behind him. Plastic forks, spoons, and knives fill the hands of customers, and bottled water and canned soft drinks, the few left, ring in the only drinks of choice. In the midst of taping orders to the metal bar in front of him, Carrasco seemed pleased to be able to keep operations going, packing a full house just like most Fridays. As for Far West Coffee, business can only go on as long as the batches last. The shop's manager, Christopher, told the Reporter Telegram drinks such as cold brew and draft lattes were brewed in batches before the notice went into effect, allowing them to serve tasty treats to community members. Once the notice became implemented, Far West Coffee shut off its reserve osmosis system, decontaminates water, and is currently using a reservoir of clean water to serve hot coffee and other made-to-order drinks. However, the supply remains very limited. "We're really relying on pastries and pre-made drinks right now," Christopher said. Chains such as Chick-fil-A, Whataburger, Golden Chick, Burger King, and Chipotle continue with regular business hours, some offering only bottled or canned drinks. Olive Garden transported RO water from Odessa for use. Starbucks locations were closed, as were Cattle Baron and Main Street Diner, just to name a couple. The boil water notice is expected to end Saturday, according to the City of Midland officials. Free water. Natural Grocers, located at 3001 Loop 250 Frontage Road, is offering free filtered water to Midlanders until the boil notice is limited. The store's RO system uses an ultraviolet sterilization process, which disinfects the water, producing a safe and high-quality liquid that does not need to be boiled before consumption. Since the system can only pump 75 gallons every hour, guests will be limited to 2 gallons a day. Hello, this is Michael, continuing with two other front page stories from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, January 7th, 2023. City expects boil water notice to be rescinded. TCEQ could make call as early as Saturday morning, by Stuart Doreen. City of Midland Utilities Director Carl Crago expects the boil water notice in place in the City of Midland to be rescinded Saturday morning. Crago said during a Friday morning press conference that there is fresh water going through the water treatment plant that meets standards provided by the state of Texas. He said requirements still include a 24-hour test before the notice can be rescinded. Those tests have been taken and sent to the Texas Commission of Environmental Quality. He expects to hear from the TCEQ early Saturday. Crago said the water main that was damaged by a contractor working on a D.R. Horton development next to State Highway 158, west of Grassland, is welded up and mainly fixed. He said the process included disinfecting water and flushing around 500,000 gallons during two separate flushes Friday afternoon. "We feel a lot better than we did last night about water quality and where we are headed," said Morris Williams, the deputy city manager of the City of Midland. Crago reminded Midlanders that it is important to clean reverse osmosis, RO filters, after the boil water notice ends. That can be done, he said, by turning on the water in the RO systems for 15 minutes. Crago also thanked utilities department employees for their work with Red Deer Construction, Benmark Supply Company, and Ferguson Supply for their efforts, including keeping the doors open Thursday night, Friday morning. Water distribution takes place. The City of Midland worked with the West Texas Food Bank to make sure those who needed bottled water had it on Friday. 5 sites were set up as water distribution areas. They were Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center, Shap Center at Midland College, Stonegate Fellowship, First Baptist Church, and the Southeast Midland Senior Center. Businesses that helped with resources, according to officials, included HEB, United Supermarkets, and Sam's Club. Why Midland ISD did not have classes. Midland ISD decided to close school out of a desire to provide the safest possible environment for students. The district did not have access to sufficient quantities of bottled water to safely prepare meals for our nearly 28,000 students, MISD offered in a statement. Due to the logistics of breakfast and lunch schedules for this many students, boiling water in sufficient quantities was also not a feasible option. Midland College and Midland Christian also did not have class Friday. Food offered for students. West Texas Food Bank Executive Director Libby Campbell said resources were available for those students who typically receive a sack or are enrolled in the Food Cafe program at Boys and Girls Club. City of Midland officials also provided students looking for meals on Friday the opportunity to eat at the MLK Community Center or the Southeast Senior Center. Midland Eateries Persist in Water Boil Notice by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Walking into Pachuco's during the noon lunch rush almost made me forget about the water boil notice. With every seat taken and a line against the wall, owner Ruben Carrasco Jr. stood behind the glass barrier, chopping brisket and sausage just like any other day. "How's it going?" I asked him. "Ask me again in a few hours," he joked. Styrofoam cups, lids, baskets, and plates line the assembly station behind him. Plastic forks, spoons, and knives fill the hands of customers, and bottled water and canned soft drinks, the few left, ring in the only drinks of choice. In the midst of taping orders to the metal bar in front of him, Carrasco seemed pleased to be able to keep operations going, packing a full house just like most Fridays. As for Far West Coffee, business can only go on as long as the batches last. The shop's manager, Christopher, told the Reporter Telegram drinks such as cold brew and draft lattes were brewed in batches before the notice went into effect, allowing them to serve tasty treats to community members. Once the notice became implemented, Far West Coffee shut off its reserve osmosis system, decontaminates water, and is currently using a reservoir of clean water to serve hot coffee and other made-to-order drinks. However, the supply remains very limited. "We're really relying on pastries and pre-made drinks right now," Christopher said. Chains such as Chick-fil-A, Whataburger, Golden Chick, Burger King, and Chipotle continue with regular business hours, some offering only bottled or canned drinks. Olive Garden transported RO water from Odessa for use. Starbucks locations were closed, as were Cattle Baron and Main Street Diner, just to name a couple. The boil water notice is expected to end Saturday, according to the City of Midland officials. Free water. Natural Grocers, located at 3001 Loop 250 Frontage Road, is offering free filtered water to Midlanders until the boil notice is limited. The store's RO system uses an ultraviolet sterilization process, which disinfects the water, producing a safe and high-quality liquid that does not need to be boiled before consumption. Since the system can only pump 75 gallons every hour, guests will be limited to 2 gallons a day.
Community Roundup for January 7th. Howard at Midland County Republican Women's. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard will speak at the MCRW luncheon, which is scheduled for 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday at Midland Country Club. Tickets range from $30 to $40 depending on membership status and reservations. Call Cindy at 806-777-3661 for more information. Permian Basin Area Foundation Scholarship Application. PBAF announced the opening of the 2023-2024 scholarship cycle. Students and counselors may view eligibility and selection criteria for scholarships on the PBAF website, www.pbaf.org. The application opened January 1st, and the deadline is March 31st. Permian Basin Area Foundation awarded more than $1 million in scholarships to area students during the last academic year. To learn more about scholarships, grants, and the philanthropic work of donors partnering with Permian Basin Area Foundation, visit www.pbaf.org or call 432-617-3213. Pre-apprentice electrical program. SkillPoint Alliance Permian Basin is accepting applications for the 2023 school year. The organization offers a free pre-apprentice electrical program hosted at Midland College and Odessa College. All program participants earn OSHA 10 safety certificates during the program and will receive assistance to obtain a Texas Department of Licensing and Registration electrical apprentice license. Classes begin on January 9th, running Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit www.skillpointalliance.org/Permian-Basin/. For more information. Calendar. State of Oil and Gas, January 17th, Bush Convention Center. Online at business.midlandtex.com/events/2023-state-of-oil-gas-10972. Dogs Rescue R Us, a Golden Tail Casino Potty Night, 7 to 10 p.m., January 28th, Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Online, drru.org. What's Up with Midland? Eccentric Brewing Company, Singer-Songwriter Night, January 21st. Horseshoe Arena, Midland County Livestock Association, January 12th through 14th. West Texas Hunting Extravaganza, January 14th. West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th. La Hacienda Event Center, Los Del Limit y Los Bravos de Ojanaga, January 20th. Laberinto, January 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday, January 21st. Friday, Kahalo, Her Photos Through Sunday. Unbridled, The Art of Tom Lee Through Sunday. Seymour Fogel, January 24th. Simon War Ranch, January 24th. Tall City Brewing Company, 3 beer releases in January. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, William Shatner and Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, January 12th. Chester Gregory, Tribute to Jackie Wilson and Friends, January 24th. Aaron Lewis, January 27th. Fortune Feimster, January 29th. Hiker Found Dead in Guadalupe Mountains National Park by Mercedes Cordero. The National Park Service reported Friday that a hiker died on New Year's Eve while visiting Guadalupe Mountains National Park. On December 31st, park officials were notified of a non-responsive hiker on the Guadalupe Peak Trail. Hikers on scene administered bystander CPR and notified park staff, according to a press release. A high wind warning was in effect on New Year's Eve with wind gusts more than 50 miles per hour and wind chills well below freezing, according to the NPS. Guadalupe Mountains National Park staff are saddened by this loss, stated Superintendent Eric Leonard, and our entire park community extends sincere condolences to the hiker's family and friends. The Guadalupe Peak Trail is a very strenuous 8.4-mile round-trip hike with a 3,000-foot elevation gain to the summit of the highest point in the state of Texas. Park officials are encouraging visitors that are hiking in a group to stick together. When hiking during high winds, you should always be prepared to turn around. You should prioritize your own safety above all else in windy conditions. Postpone your hike if the weather is bad, according to the press release. Odessa man gets 12 years for distributing fentanyl. Jesus Arevalo, 44, of Odessa, was sentenced Thursday to more than 12 years in prison for distributing fentanyl, according to the Justice Department. The Drug Enforcement Administration received information in late 2021 that Arevalo had received and distributed kilograms of cocaine and fentanyl in the Midland-Odessa region. During a joint investigation between the DEA and the FBI, undercover agents made multiple purchases of blue M30 pills containing fentanyl from Arevalo, according to the press release. In July 2022, investigators executed a search warrant on Arevalo's residence and seized approximately 517 grams of M30 pills containing fentanyl, a loaded handgun, and a large amount of U.S. currency. The investigation revealed that Arevalo had received and distributed at least 2,000 M30 pills containing fentanyl each month in the 6 months leading up to the search, totaling at least 12,000 fentanyl-laced M30 pills. He was arrested on July 28th. Arevalo pleaded guilty to one count of possession on September 27th with intent to distribute 400 grams or more of a mixture and substance containing fentanyl, according to the press release. Fentanyl continues to flood the United States at an alarming rate, and our West Texas communities are not immune from its devastation, said Special Agent in Charge Jeffrey R. Downey of the FBI El Paso Field Office. This case demonstrates our commitment to address the dangerous trafficking of fentanyl. We will continue to work with our partners at the DEA and state and local law enforcement partners to interdict the distribution of fentanyl wherever it may occur and bring to justice those who are fueling the epidemic. Minuet Club of Midland presents 7 debutantes. The 64th Annual Minuet Club of Midland Debutante Presentation was held December 22nd at the Petroleum Club of Midland. 7 debutantes were presented by the club. Miles Chapel Abney is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. William Knight Abney. She is the granddaughter of David Scott Miles, the late David Scott Miles, and Mr. and Mrs. William Allen Abney. Miles is a junior at Vanderbilt University, where she is majoring in cognitive studies. She was escorted by Carter Samuel Vick, son of Mrs. Kelly Horton Vick and Jarrett Walter Vick. He is a student at the University of Oklahoma. Blakely Colleen Beal is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Stephen Adams Beal. She is the granddaughter of Mr. and Mrs. Q. Dallas Boykin, Mr. and Mrs. William Bremen Houston, and Mr. and Mrs. Barry Ashley Beal Sr. Blakely is a junior at the University of Texas, where she is majoring in studio arts. She was escorted by Stephen Marshall Steen III, son of Mr. and Mrs. Stephen Marshall Steen Jr. He graduated from the Naval Academy last May. Blakeney Lauren Baldrick is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. James Miles Baldrick. She is the granddaughter of Sue Starr Baldrick, the late James Pratt Baldrick, and the late Mr. and Mrs. Daniel Joseph Ertljack. Blakeney is a junior at the University of Oklahoma, where she is majoring in energy management. She was escorted by Nicholas Charles Baiano, son of Mr. and Mrs. Gregory Frank Baiano. He is a student at Louisiana State University. Kelsey Margaret Moore is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Michael Sean Moore. She is the granddaughter of Mrs. Charles Davis Ray, the late Charles Davis Ray, Mr. and Mrs. William David Marsh, Mr. and Mrs. Michael Clarence Sport, Charles Kenneth Moore, and the late Regina Dillon White. Kelsey is a junior at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center, where she is majoring in speech, language, and hearing sciences. She was escorted by William Collier Pennington III, son of Mr. and Mrs. William Collier Pennington Jr. He is a student at Dodge City College. Carly Grace Smith is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Sheldon Lynn Smith. She is the granddaughter of Mrs. Michael Brand Morse, the late Michael Brand Morse, Mr. and Mrs. Wilson Smith, and Mr. and Mrs. Kenneth Casarolo. Carly is a junior at Texas Tech University, where she is majoring in fine arts and acting. She was escorted by David Postlewaite, son of Mr. and Mrs. Stephen Postlewaite. He is a student at Texas Tech University. Hannah Elizabeth Ware is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Carl Warren Ware. She is a granddaughter of Carol Strait Stone, Eldred Wayne Stone, the late Carlene Traub Ware, and the late Herbert Earl Ware, Jr. Hannah is a junior at the University of Oklahoma, where she is majoring in chemical biosciences. She was escorted by Riggs Robert McDonald, son of Mr. and Mrs. Mark Stephen McDonald, Jr. He graduated from Trinity Valley Community College. Erica Grace Williams is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Bert Ryan Williams. She is the granddaughter of Mr. and Mrs. William Butts Wright, Jr. and Mr. and Mrs. Mark Douglas Williams. Erica Grace is a junior at Texas Tech University, where she is majoring in animal science. She was escorted by Case Andrew Thompson, son of Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Trey Thompson. He is a student at Texas A&M University. The 2022 debutante families have selected Bynum School as their philanthropy recipient. Rig count records the steepest drop in 15 months by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity took a holiday break as Christmas arrived and the year came to an end. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has reported weekly since the 1940s, sank by 7 rigs to 772, the biggest weekly decline since September 2021 and the lowest level since November. Still, it's 184 more than the 588 at work at the end of 2021. The number of rigs seeking crude oil fell by 3 to 618, the lowest level since November, but 137 more than the 481 drilling for oil last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped by 4 to 152, the lowest level since June, but 45 more than the 107 the previous year. Texas bucked the holiday slowdown, adding 2 rigs for 378 at work across the state, 104 more than the 274 reported last year. New Mexico dropped 2 to 100. Ohio 1 was the only other producing state to see a rise in activity. California 2, Louisiana 2, Oklahoma 3, and Pennsylvania 1 joined New Mexico in seeing less activity. The Permian Basin was unchanged at 353 rigs, 61 more than 292 at work across the region a year ago. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian, with 64 rigs, down 1 for the week, and 4th consecutive weekly decline. There was a 3-way tie for 2nd place among Martin County, down 1, Reeves County, also down 1, and Eddy County, New Mexico, unchanged. Midland County had 32 rigs drilling within county lines, up 1 for the week. Loving County added 2 for 29 rigs. Howard County reported 22 rigs for a 3rd week. Upton and Ward counties each reported 16 rigs, up 1 for Upton and down 1 for Ward. Glasscock County had 12 rigs, up 1 for the week. Culberson County reported 10 rigs for a 3rd week. Energy Foundations, part of the energy-dedicated software-as-a-service platform Enverus, said its U.S. rig count, 861, during the week ended January 4th, falling by 11 from the previous week. The count is down 2% from a month earlier, but up 21% year over year. In the last week, the Gulf Coast declined by 4 rigs to a total of 116, while the Permian lost 1 rig at 335. Both the Williston and Anadarko basins added 1 rig to reach 42 and 83 rigs. The Appalachian and DJ basins were flat at 56 and 19 rigs. As the new year began, the most active operators were EOG Resources, 30 rigs, ConocoPhillips, 29, Occidental Petroleum, 28, Pioneer Natural Resources, 25, Mewbourne Oil, 23, and Devon Energy, 23. Compared to a year ago, EOG is running 6 more rigs on the first day of 2023. Conoco is 9 higher, Oxy is up by 11, Mewbourne up by 6, and Devon up by 5. Pioneer, the only pure play among these 6, is down by 1 rig year over year. There were 337 companies running at least 1 rig in the U.S. at the start of the year, compared to 277 when 2022 began. Of these 337 companies, 65% added rigs, 27% were flat, and 8% dropped rigs year over year. Oil and gas prices have rough start in new year, by Mella McEwen. It was a rough start to the new year for energy futures, which opened the first trading week of 2023 in free fall, weakened by demand uncertainty. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange opened trading Tuesday by tumbling $3.33 per barrel, followed by a further $4.09 Wednesday, to mark the worst start to a year for commodity prices in a number of years. WTI regained its footing slightly, rising 83 cents Thursday to another 10 cents Friday to end the week at $73.77 a barrel, still an 8.1% weekly loss. The posted price ended the week at $70.25 a barrel. One thing certain about the price of oil and gas is its future uncertainty, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. The latter part of 2022 has seen prices for both oil and gas drop significantly from earlier highs. We hope that global economic conditions will continue to improve in 2023 and demand will increase, which should strengthen the pricing environment. Edward Moya, a senior market analyst, The Americas with Oanda, said prices have been due for a rebound after the steep drop of the first 2 days of the trading week. In his daily e-newsletter, he wrote Thursday's payroll report was very positive for oil markets because it showed the labor market remains robust and wage pressures are easing, which should allow the Federal Reserve to stop raising interest rates fairly soon. For oil to keep this rally going, energy traders need to see China showing progress with their current COVID outbreak, Moya wrote in his newsletter. He continued, traders will be watching the U.S. inflation report, China's CPI, and trade data, and the Energy Information Administration's short-term crude outlook in the coming week. The primary focus, however, remains on China, as energy traders will keep a close eye on their handling of this COVID surge. Since the Saudis are already slashing prices, we could hear a steady chorus of demand destruction concerns if China's COVID situation worsens. Earnings season begins on Friday, and that could be huge if the banks turn very pessimistic about the economy and the U.S. consumer, Moya wrote.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 7th. STEM Academy students selected to send science experiment to space. Ector County ISD announced Friday that a team of 5 students from the STEM Academy campus will be sending an experiment to the International Space Station in the summer of 2023 as part of Mission 17 of the Student Spaceflight Experiments Program. SSEP is an international program that engages students in designing experiments that will be carried out in microgravity by astronauts on the ISS. This will be the 4th experiment from ECISD flown to the ISS as part of the SSEP program. The winning student team, coached by their teacher, Gary Grummetbauer, created an experiment to test whether a specific fungus, Pestalotiopsis microporosa, would survive and reproduce in space, with the goal of the fungus breaking down waste plastic into biodegradable components. The biodegradable byproduct of this experiment could then be used by astronauts to grow plants in. The team members from STEM Academy are Evan Hernandez, Brian Nash, Georgie Shomaroff, Evan Boyer, and Kagan Holder. These students will be continuing work on their experiment this spring with mentoring from their teacher and 2 faculty members from the University of Texas Permian Basin Biology Department before it rockets to space this summer. Participation in SSEP provides a pathway not only to real-world STEM, or science, technology, engineering, and math, and real space flight, but also to pursuing STEM subjects in college, by building relationships with university-level mentors. The experiment will spend 4 to 6 weeks aboard the ISS, where astronauts will follow instructions provided by the student team to carry out the experiment. The experiment will then be returned to Earth, and the students will compare the results between the sample that went to space with an identical sample that stayed on Earth. Two other teams from ECISD were finalists in the flight experiment competition, George H.W. Bush and New Tech Odessa and the Hayes STEM Academy. Another exciting component of SSEP Mission 17 is the Mission Patch Art and Design Competition, which will kick off later this month. ECISD would like to thank HEB, Chevron, the Education Foundation of Odessa, Kepler Aerospace, whose support makes ECISD's participation in SSEC possible, a news release said. The Student Space Flight Experiments Program is a program of the National Center for Earth and Space Science Education in the United States and the Arthur C. Clarke Institute for Space Education internationally. It enabled through a strategic partnership with Nanorax LLC, which is working with NASA under a Space Act agreement as part of the utilization of the International Space Station as a national laboratory. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 7th. Burned baby's parents file lawsuit. A Midland couple has filed a lawsuit against Odessa Regional Medical Center claiming their baby was severely burned in the neonatal unit of the hospital in November of 2021. According to the lawsuit filed Thursday in Ector County District Court, Laura Salgado's baby girl was born 15 weeks early in July 2021 at 440 grams. She remained in ORMC's neonatal ICU unit for months. Salgado and the baby's father, Robbie Hanks, claimed that in November 2021, registered nurse Leticia Najera hung or allowed to be hung a plastic toy above the baby's crib. The warming lights melted it, and the plastic dripped onto the baby's cheek and jaw, permanently scarring it, the lawsuit alleges. The baby will likely have to undergo plastic surgery as a result of the injuries, which no one has taken responsibility for, the lawsuit stated. In addition, the lawsuit claims the injuries were not documented in the baby's chart. Najera and the ORMC were both named in the lawsuit, and the couple's attorney, Bruce Beach of Austin, is seeking damages of $100,000 to $500,000 on behalf of the couple, claiming negligence. Stacy Brown, president of ORMC, has previously said the hospital has a policy of not commenting on pending litigation. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 7th. Urban Air Adventure Park Midland ready for grand opening. Urban Air Adventure Park announced on Friday its official grand opening of the new Midland location, located at 4706 North Midkiff Road, Suite Number 1, at 10 a.m. today. The first 200 guests in line on grand opening day to purchase a Platinum or Ultimate Pass will receive free basic access to the park for one entire year, the press release stated. There will also be a DJ and donuts for those waiting in line. The park will open at 10 a.m. Some of the key attractions include Skyrider, virtual reality, Warrior Course, and climbing walls. Owner and local resident Gina Marie Soto stated in the press release, "We're excited to celebrate our long-awaited grand opening of Urban Air Adventure Park with the Midland community. We have worked hard to bring a safe, fun, and super exciting family entertainment center with incredible attractions for the entire family. We make memories where families can disconnect from a busy outside world and cherish the joy of laughter and giggles through play. Get ready. We can't wait to see adventurers of all ages who need a venue to celebrate every day." This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 7th from local and state news roundup. Woman accused of assaulting sister with tweezers. An Odessa woman is facing a second-degree felony charge after her sister told Odessa police she attacked her with a pair of tweezers during an argument over a sweater. According to an OPD report, officers received an assault call from the 500 block of Overton Avenue around 7 p.m. on Wednesday. When they arrived, a 37-year-old woman told them she and her younger sister, Joanna Martinez, got into an argument about a sweater. During the argument, the woman said Martinez, 33, grabbed a pair of tweezers and began striking her in the face with them, the report said. Officers saw a small laceration under the woman's eye, and because the officer determined Martinez could have caused her sister to lose the eye or suffer another serious bodily injury, arrested her on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, the report said. Martinez admitted to fighting with her sister because her sister wanted to take the sweater, the report said. She said she had her phone in her hand when she struck her sister in the face. Martinez remains in the Ector County Jail. No information was immediately available. Odessa woman sentenced in assault. An Odessa woman accused of attacking her boyfriend with a knife last September was placed on 5 years deferred adjudication after pleading guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Ector County District Court Judge John Schrode sentenced Tiffany Diana Rios, 35, on Tuesday. According to an OPD report, police received a 911 call shortly before 7 p.m. on Friday about a stabbing victim in the 1100 block of West 13th Street. When officers arrived, they found a 37-year-old man with an open deep laceration on his left forearm, and he was taken to Medical Center Hospital. Later, when officers spoke to the man at the hospital, he told them Rios asked him if he was coming to her apartment on Whitaker because she didn't have any money to feed her kids. The man said Rios became upset with him because he wouldn't give her any money, grabbed a knife, and jabbed at him with it, according to the report. He was able to dodge that attack, but when she swung the knife like in a sword, it got his arm, the report said. Rios told police her boyfriend came over uninvited and she swung the knife at him in self-defense after he tried to hit her with a tin bottle, according to the report. Officers found text messages on the man's phone from Rios telling him to come home. Rios was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony, carrying a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. Man arrested on suspicion of peace officer assault. An Odessa man was arrested Thursday evening after police officers said he attacked them at Medical Center Hospital. According to an Odessa Police Department report, employees of a CVS on West University Boulevard called 911 around 6:40 p.m. Thursday because they saw Jonathan Ryan Watson, 37, repeatedly punching a vehicle. When officers arrived, a shirtless Watson was sweating profusely despite the fact that it was in the 50s, the report stated. He asked the officers if they'd seen the moon shake and demanded they say his name and tell him he was going to die, the report stated. Because Watson's heart rate was rapid, he was taken to Medical Center Hospital, but once there, he kicked an OPD officer in the groin and punched a hospital officer in the head, the report stated. He also tried to take the hospital officer's weapon from him. Watson was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of two counts of assault on a public servant, causing bodily injury, a third-degree felony, attempting to take a weapon from a peace officer, and public intoxication. Information as to bail was unavailable Friday afternoon. Man arrested in connection to burglaries and robberies. An Odessa man suspected of committing a string of burglaries and robberies using a stolen vehicle 6 years ago has been arrested. According to Ector County Jail records, Jesse Manuel Castillo was booked into the Ector County Jail Tuesday on three counts of aggravated robbery, two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity, and one count each of burglary of a habitation, theft of property, and possession of marijuana. Odessa police reports indicate a woman reported someone stole her Jeep Liberty on January 1st, 2017, from the 2300 block of North Palm Green and it was later used during the commission of a burglary and another stolen car case. Video surveillance from a private residence showed Castillo, Aaron Yanez, Alec Kirkland, and Edward Hernandez in the Jeep prior to committing robbery at the Stripes at Faudry Road and Highway 191 on January 3, 2017, according to an OPD report. At the time, Castillo, Yanez, and Hernandez were 17. Kirkland was 18, records show. An OPD report also indicates Castillo and Kirkland were identified as the two men who robbed a Stripes on Andrews Highway on January 2, 2017, at gunpoint. An OPD report indicates Kirkland and Castillo were later arrested by Midland police following a vehicle pursuit involving a stolen Chevrolet Camaro. It's unclear what happened with Castillo after that arrest. However, jail records show Castillo's arrest this week was based on warrants issued in 2017 following offenses allegedly committed in December 2016 and January 2017. His arrest is also linked to a sealed Ector County case file in 2017. Kirkland pleaded guilty to 3 counts of robbery and 1 count of burglary of a habitation, placed on probation, and when he violated probation, received 5 years in prison in April of 2019, court records indicate. Hernandez pleaded guilty to 2 counts of robbery and 1 count of burglary of a habitation and received a suspension sentence of 5 years in July 2018, court records show. Court records show Yanez was sentenced to 6 years in prison in a December 2016 aggravated robbery case in September of 2017. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 17th. Local roundup continued. Odessa man sentenced 12 years for distributing fentanyl. In Midland, an Odessa man was sentenced on Thursday to 151 months in prison for distributing fentanyl, a Department of Justice press release detailed. In late 2021, agents with the Drug Enforcement Administration received information that Jesus Arevalo, 44, received and distributed kilograms of cocaine and fentanyl in the Midland-Odessa region. The DEA and FBI consequently opened a joint investigation through which undercover agents made multiple purchases of blue M30 pills containing fentanyl from Arevalo. While executing a search warrant of Arevalo's residence in July 2022, investigators seized approximately 517 grams of M30 pills containing fentanyl, a loaded handgun, and a large amount of U.S. currency. Further investigation showed that Arevalo had received and distributed at least 2,000 M30 pills containing fentanyl each month in the 6 months leading up to the search, totaling at least 12,000 fentanyl-laced M30 pills. Arevalo pleaded guilty on September 27, 2022, to 1 count of possession with intent to distribute 400 grams or more of a mixture and substance containing fentanyl. He has been in federal custody since his arrest on July 28, 2022. Fentanyl has continued to kill too many people for far too long, U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza stated in the press release. It is a priority for our office to bring fentanyl traffickers to justice, disrupt their operations, and save lives. Fentanyl continues to flood the United States at an alarming rate, and our West Texas communities are not immune from its devastation. Special Agent in Charge Jeffrey Downey of the FBI El Paso Field Office stated in the press release, "This case demonstrates our commitment to address the dangerous trafficking of fentanyl. We will continue to work with our partners at the DEA and state and local enforcement partners to interdict the distribution of fentanyl wherever it may occur and bring to justice those who are fueling the epidemic." In 2022, the DEA seized more than 50.6 million fake pills, often laced with fentanyl, more than double the amount of fentanyl pills seized in 2021.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.